one more, well, two more control loci for us. As soon as we can, we'll send a couple of drones to pick them up. We can use them to relay orders to the non-Scut mining drones. I thought for a moment. Plus, they'll be useful to supplement the roamers for manipulation. Ito nodded, and silence descended. Campbell finally broke the pause.
We are at war, essentially, right? Are the colonies in danger?
I considered for a millisecond. I don't see how. At least on an immediate basis, ma'am. Medeiros doesn't have anything that can bomb you from orbit. If we can keep the auto factories from him, or at least keep the printers away, that won't change. If he gets a printer, or already has one, he still has to bootstrap up through all the automation needed for an auto factory before he can start building something like an asteroid mover, and there's no way he'll be dumb enough to try to print anything explosive.
On the other hand, Ito said in a slow drawl, inviting me to explain counterpoint.
I grinned.
On the other hand, we have no printer capability at the moment, although we are in possession of the actual printers, more or less.
And we'd have to go through the same bootstrapping process. To a lesser extent, maybe, because we have roamers and drones and now the two androids.
So it's detente.
I'm not sure it's even at that level, ma'am. Right now it's more like that Hugh Grant and Colin Firth fight scene in Bridget Jones's Diary. She looked at me askance, then shook her head without asking. Apparently, Mac already had a reputation. Look, I continued, if we can get one or more of the printers onto one of your worlds and get enough raw elements down for it and do all this without being intercepted by Medeiros, then we can maybe build busters or something.
That's a lot of ifs, Campbell replied.
Well, it'll depend on what Medeiros does next. I'm afraid we're forced to react to his moves. Any attempt on our part to control the play will result in a missile down our throats.
How many missiles does he have?
Zero, we thought, so unknown. Ito thought for a moment.
You have a number of mining drones, I understand. Can you use them to ram the Brazilian?
It was a good try, and I nodded an acknowledgement. Sorry, President Ito, but that would be like trying to ram a sports car with tractors. In principle, you could do damage, but first you have to catch him. Ito sighed and sat back. Again, there was a contemplative silence. Look, I said, if you think of anything, call, email, or text me. We'll keep working on it from our end, and I'll keep you updated.
Good enough.
Premier Campbell nodded and ended her connection. A moment later, Ito blinked out as well. I sighed, sat back, and looked at the ceiling, like the others weren't bad enough. By the time Medeiros got to the nearest LaGrange auto factory location, we'd long since flung the printers and print heads well beyond his ability to detect them. The Bobs had also managed to hide, damage, or collect most of the auto factory automation, leaving nothing valuable except the actual metal ingots. We watched Medeiros from a non-Scut drone, carefully disguised as flotsam, running on power cells so as not to show up on radiation detectors. It would run down soon, but if Medeiros didn't pick up on it, we could collect it later. If he did, he would have gained only a regular mining drone, and one without a fusion reactor. The Brazilian craft buzzed around, inspecting and searching, then settled on a single location and stopped moving. I half expected some kind of raging and destroying things, but realistically, Medeiros was career military and presumably well-disciplined. He wouldn't waste missiles on petulance. I hoped he would decide on a strategy before the drone gave out. We'd identified three possibilities. One, head for one of the colonies and set up a picket, on the presumption that we had sent at least one printer that way. Two, head off and start scanning for printers and print heads on their lonely trajectories. Or three, start looking for roamers and mining drones to either destroy or try to take over. And finally, just when the drone was on its last few watts of stored power, Medeiros accelerated out of the area.
Do we have an indication of where he's going?
I jerked in surprise. Too intent on watching Medeiros, I hadn't realized that Will was visiting my VR. I turned to him. I don't think so.
He's just headed off in what appears to be some random direction. The power cells are about to give out, so we can't track him by sudar. Will muttered an expletive, a clear indication that the situation was getting to him.
We have to assume scenarios one or two, then, since they're the worst cases. How many printers and heads have we rerouted to a colony?
Two of each going to each colony, well spread out. Of course, he can spot them on approach with a sudar sweep, but he'll have to be close enough to physically intercept.
Then he'll have to intercept without destroying them.
Destruction is acceptable from our point of view. I nodded. This is going to be a long, drawn-out battle, Will. Garfield and I were sitting, drinking coffee, taking one of our increasingly rare breaks, when Guppy popped in.
Printer convoy en route to Asgard has been hit with a sudar sweep.
Garfield and I looked at each other.
Crap, he said.
That means he went for option one.
I guess it makes sense, I replied. For option two, he'd be scanning an increasingly large volume of space. This way, we are essentially coming to him. I turned to Guppy. Were you able to triangulate?
Negative. Sweep was short range.
Smart, Garfield said. He doesn't announce himself unless he makes contact, and if he does, he's right on top of us.
Which means he's right on top of us, I smacked my forehead.
Doesn't matter. Anyway, I checked, and this particular group has no scut. They'll have to operate on standing orders.
Convoy has been disabled. Video feed cut off.
Garfield and I exchanged a look. Had Medeiros simply blown up the convoy? Was his plan to deny us the printers?
Wordlessly, I called up the truncated video. Garfield watched the 3-second sequence.
Well, hell, I said when we were done. It appears Medeiros can learn.
Mm-hmm. He's building busters. Or he built busters.
Wait, when did he build busters?
Garfield frowned and continued. If this is the Alpha Centauri Medeiros, then his first exposure to us was the day we raised their installation. He would have had to build busters after that. There was no indication that the Brazilians were building kinetic weapons before that point.
I gave him a sickly grin. Sorry, buddy, I guess you missed the conversation after the attack. We figure he has at least one printer of his own. So he learned from Alpha Centauri.
So why is he doing what he's doing?
Two-pronged strategy. Attempt to gather as many printers as he can while denying them to us. Geometric progression means a small advantage up front can turn into an insurmountable lead, eventually. I stared into space for a few milliseconds. We have to take him out now. If he gets ahead of us, the colonists are as good as dead. Garfield closed his eyes and shook his head slowly. And we put them there. Captain Richards from the Asgard colony pressed his lips together and said nothing. He didn't have to. On top of everything the colonists were dealing with, they now had Medeiros to worry about.
Are you certain that he will attack the colony?
Not certain, Captain, but he's made it pretty clear on previous encounters that he is utterly loyal to Brazil, considers us to be at war, and isn't interested in discussions. I'm also not entirely sure he's sane at this point. I looked over at Garfield, who rolled his eyes dramatically. I'd hate to try communicating with him, only to find that we'd attracted his attention to the colonies. Richards nodded and sat back with a huff.
And we have nothing.
Not that we've been able to find. We could ask Mac if we could get him onto a cradle, but right now we can't risk trying to fly his matrix in. We're getting occasional glimpses of Medeiros, and he does his best to destroy anything he detects.
At both colonies? How many of him are there?
Richards frowned at me. I thought for a second. There's no overlap in appearances, so there's only one of him, but I think he's programmed his busters to patrol and knock down anything they detect. Right now, he owns the high ground. General Kiroshi from the Japanese colony had been listening without comment in another video window. Now he spoke up.
We have only small printers. Useful for quick manufacturing of minor items, but insufficient for anything like your busters. And it would take months to bootstrap up to real industrial printers.
Richards nodded.
Same here. Ours are big enough to print more mosquito killers, but that's...
Wait, what? I sat up straight. Richards raised an eyebrow. Super vampire something something mosquitoes. Mac didn't mention them?
Yes. I remember them. I gave him a sideways glare. I didn't realize you were handling manufacturing yourselves.
Well, sure. Because we needed thousands and Mac couldn't be bothered. They're about the size of a baseball, so not really useful for anything but mosquito patrol.
But thousands?
I leaned forward, radiating interest.
Richards' eyes started to grow rounder as he realized something was up.
Yes, most of them are on standby right now since we seem to have beaten back the Scourge. We were going to return them to raw materials eventually, but I think we had 3,000 or 4,000 running around at one point.
I let a slow smile grow on my face. They may be small, but a few hundred hitting a buster at the same time will still have an effect. We may be able to clear the sky around Asgard long enough to get the printers to ground.
Can they even fly outside of atmosphere?
Not a problem, Captain. It's actually more trouble building them to fly in atmosphere.
Excellent, the captain said. Let's get this operation going.
The mosquito killers were too small to carry scutcoms, so we had to give the AMIs complete enough instructions to handle any situation we could think of. One in each 100 was designated as an observer, ordered to send a video record back to the colony, if possible, or to record and return otherwise. We sent off 2,000 killers in 5 squads, hoping to catch as many busters as possible by surprise. A couple of killers were programmed to leak radio telemetry, which hopefully would attract some of Medeiros' devices. Captain Richards was mirroring everything to Kiroshi and myself. I watched the numerous video windows as the observers delivered status and telemetry.
"Got a blip," Captain Richards announced.
I'd seen the change in the video window several milliseconds before, of course, but there was no good reason to remind him of my true nature. The telemetry from the observer indicated 2 bogies approaching the group. Per their orders, the killers changed course to intercept. We hoped that Medeiros hadn't programmed caution into his busters. A bunch of baseball-sized objects hopefully wouldn't trigger the default danger avoidance routine. The busters zeroed in on the noisy killers, seemingly ignoring the cloud of attendants. At the last possible moment, every single mosquito killer altered course to aim directly at the 2 busters. The change apparently registered with the dim AMI brains because both busters went into hard turns. Too little, too late, though. The smaller and more maneuverable killers easily kept up with the change in vectors. Contact wasn't the dramatic flash we were used to seeing as 2 heavy devices collided at interplanetary speeds. The killers avoided the large steel ball up front and went for reactor cooling radiators, surge emitters, and other obvious signs of technology. It was like being pelted in a hailstorm. The first couple dozen impacts had no real effect, then dents started to appear, followed by seams popping, then parts flying off. In less than 30 seconds, the busters were drifting, aimlessly, and we still had more than 100 killers left.
"See if you can get them to shepherd the parts into low orbit," Richard suggested. "If we can rescue the material, great. Otherwise, we push it into atmosphere and deny it to Medeiros."
I nodded. A good strategy. I wasn't sure how we'd get that much mass down to ground level, other than the obvious way, but I'd worry about that once we had rescued some drones.
2 down, Richards grinned at me, then turned in his video window to face Kiroshi. "General, once we've cleared the Asgard environs, I'll send a squad of mosquito killers your way."
General Kiroshi nodded.
"Thank you. Even if we are not ultimately successful, the process of attrition should keep Medeiros busy."
"Yes," I added. "We just need to knock off busters faster than he can make them. And if he's making busters, he's not making more printers."
"We'll keep at this, Bill," Captain Richards nodded to me. "I'll keep you up to date."
Good enough. I still had a war with the others to prepare for.
26. Cities in Fight. Marcus, September 2215, Poseidon. I watched the long-range image which showed the expanding cloud of debris that used to be my Heaven vessel decoy. I'd been lying about my location for several months now, and the Council seemed to have bought it. 3 Council security vessels left the area at far too high an acceleration for the cargo vessels they appeared to be.
It would seem the council could be sneaky as well. I fired off a report to Riker, CC'd to Bill, and saved a backup to my Fortress of Solitude, circling Eta Cassiopeia B. If the council ever found that, I'd be thoroughly hooped. Fortunately, that was unlikely. The council still had fewer than a dozen ships, and the companion star simply hadn't come up in discussions for a long time. Of course, the council had obviously been engaging in covert preparations as well, as evinced by the three souped-up and armed cargo ships. Now that they believed me dead, I hoped that they would openly play their hand. I returned my presence to my android, which was standing at parade rest. As I moved my arms into a more relaxed position, everyone turned to me.
Well, Cal said.
I grinned at him. Three very non-standard cargo vessels just took out my decoy vessel. It would have attempted evasive tactics consistent with its published specs. I'm sure the security personnel are very proud of themselves.
What about the cargo vessels?
I've got some stealth busters following them right now, but we don't know what the Council's total strength is or where they've placed it. I have to assume that my estimate of a dozen ships is incorrect. We'll have to take a wait-and-see stance until they show their hand. And remember, officially, I'm dead. Gina looked up from her phone and cut into the conversation.
They've moved on four cities. Lothar, Morbus, Xanator, and Gethol. Attempted to board and take over. You were right. They were trying to avoid damaging the cities.
Status? I asked.
Repelled with significant losses. They didn't expect resistance. They also didn't expect,
Gina replied,
weapons systems that weren't on the blueprints.
I grinned. My fault. I forgot to file the changes with the permits department. Cal waved his phone.
They've made an announcement.
We all turned to him, eager to hear what the council had come up with. Cal read through the text, deliberately injecting a pompous tone into the pronouncement. When he was done, we all sat in a semicircle, ready for a council of war. So the takeaway, I said, looking up at the dome overhead, is that the evil, evil replicant is defunct and everyone should be good little citizens and come back to the mats. Or else.
And if we don't, they'll start shooting down cities in 24 hours.
Cal shook his head in exaggerated disbelief.
We're at war now, even if the word hasn't actually been used. Blowing Marcus up can't really be misinterpreted.
I suppose they could take the stance that I'm not alive, therefore it was just a case of obsoleting some recalcitrant equipment. I gave my friends a lopsided grin. And the thing with those cities could be called a police action. Gina rolled her eyes at me, mocking my favorite expression.
Or they were just tired of listening to you talk. Now are you willing to start fighting?
I shook my head. I still don't know where all their assets are. I want to take everything out cleanly in one strike. And I don't want to have to kill anyone.
Good luck with that, Cal muttered.
We spent the next few hours monitoring developments. Things seemed to have settled into a stalemate with the council making threats and the cities daring them to try or simply remaining silent. Then, more trouble. Two ships came out of Sunward and launched missiles at Amhor. My assets were all space-side, shadowing or searching for council assets, so I had nothing for defense. The city, though, had those undocumented features. Particle weapon turrets, courtesy of Bill's Skunk Works, activated immediately and attempted to shoot the missiles out of the sky. The attackers responded by firing more missiles. I'm impressed, I said. The basic cargo ship design doesn't have a lot of room for weapons storage and launchers. I'd be interested in seeing how...
Christ's sake, Marcus, we're in danger here. Could you dial it back?
I gave Cal a rueful smile by way of apology, then turned back to watch the drama. The ships seemed to have emptied themselves of missiles, and our defensive batteries had taken out the first two missiles. The second pair were getting too close for comfort, though, and seemed to have figured out the defensive patterns as they were evading all attempts to shoot them out of the sky. With a flash of inspiration, I took control of a couple of flyers sitting in the docking bay. I sent them toward the missiles at full acceleration. Flyers were not military vehicles or flying explosives, so they really had no chance of catching or even intercepting an approaching missile.
but they did have the effect of splitting the attention of the missile AMIs. It was just enough to slow down the dodging, and the defensive turrets blew both missiles out of the air. The ships, now apparently unarmed, turned and flew off. I called a couple of drones from orbit to shadow them. If they flew back to a base somewhere to reload, I'd have a target. But there was no time to celebrate our victory. Cal leaped to his feet and uttered a string of profanities. Then he turned to look at the rest of us and said, "The bastard shot down Thark." There were gasps and cries of shock, but not surprise. Thark and Amhor were the residences of what we somewhat ironically called the Revolutionary Council. We'd published disinformation, but somehow the Council had seen through it. Regardless, the Council had just upped the ante. Gina asked,
"Survivors?"
Cal looked at his phone for several seconds, his eyes moving back and forth. I noticed that several other people were poking their tablets furiously.
"Their escape pods were observed ejecting before it hit water, but I'd bet not everyone got out." Gina glared at me.
"Now we're at war. They're trying to hit us everywhere at once, to end it before we can react. It's not going to stop until they think they've won. It will just continue to escalate, and more people will die. Now, Marcus."
I sighed and nodded my head. Without a word, I deactivated my android and returned to VR. A quick status check at computer speeds showed that I had busters trailing all Council ships that we'd been able to locate. I ordered all busters to attack, concentrating on taking out the reactor or drive systems. The subject of cloaking technology hadn't really come up in conversation with the Council, so the ships were caught flat-footed. All clean shots. There should be no deaths unless someone was standing right by the reactor at the wrong time. Escape pods ejected from all of them. None of which would help with the Council. For that, I activated Phase 2. The Council had set up security at strategic locations such as power stations and flyer depots, as well as roving patrols to ensure citizens stayed put and obeyed curfews. I gave the command and cargo drones dropped off squads of roamers throughout the northern and southern mats. I'd learned the utility of roamers as foot soldiers almost 100 years ago in New Handletown. This time, I had more than just the 20-centimeter models available. All over the towns and industrial sections, Council security forces found themselves set upon by roamers, from the 1-inch models that would try to crawl down your pants right up to the 2-meter heavy lifting models, every single one armed with plasma cutters, pliers, and a total lack of fear. Within 10 minutes, I got the all-clear from Gina, who was coordinating with local resistance. I pulled up a video window. "Have you located the Council members yet?" Gina shook her head.
"No. As we expected, their published locations were all bogus. Chances are their movement history is at least partly fiction as well. We're analyzing on the basis of defensibility and obscurity."
I nodded. "My money is still on subs." Gina snorted.
"If so, they can stay out there all they want. I'm not going to risk an encounter with a Kraken or Hydra just to capture those turds."
"Maybe the wildlife will take care of it for us." Cal popped up in another call window, joining the conference.
"We've got control of the comms center. Want me to send out on all points?"
"Do it," I nodded. "And see if you can get an update on Thark."
"Already done. We've pulled about half the population out of the drink," Cal responded. "Still scanning for more pods. At the moment, there are about 150 people missing."
I closed my eyes, feeling nauseated. We'd admitted the possibility of casualties, but the reality, even a potential reality at the moment, was so much harder to take. "Okay, Cal. Keep me updated." When I had time, I would have to do some soul-searching. Between the Poseidon Revolution, the Sol System War, and the overthrow of New Jerusalem, my various incarnations seemed to always be in the thick of things. How many deaths was I answerable for?
27. Repairs. Herschel, July 2227, Delta Pavonis.
There's no real reason for your virtual reality self to be tense. I knew that. It didn't help. I found myself gritting my teeth so hard that my jaw began to ache. After months of investigation and tinkering, Neil and I were ready to try activating the power core. We had the nuclear deterrent sitting in the middle of the central corridor, just in case. But truthfully, neither of us really thought it would be necessary. The wiring had eventually succumbed to our detective work, and we were confident that we would be able to power up the core without powering up the bays. Which still left the question of activating the power core. Since we'd never seen this particular technology before, there was a lot of guesswork involved. Needless to say, guesswork and power cores did not go well together. We weren't total idiots. We were standing off more than 1,000 clicks while the roamers and drones ran through the final steps. I idly wondered for a moment if the AMIs ever got tired of wearing the red shirts. Probably not, or they'd have gone on strike by now. If this doesn't work, we're going to be in deep doo-doo. Neil glanced sideways at me. Better than being a cloud of ionized gas. And even if it does work, there are going to be questions, Neil. We really should have announced the find on the first day. Neil glared at me, one side of his mouth up in a sneer of disbelief. I hate you. I grinned at him. Okay, joking aside, buddy. We're 8th generation Bobs. Pond scum. Star Trek security looks down their noses at us. I'd like to have something under my belt that I can stamp on my hull. Neil took a deep breath, let it out slowly. Yeah, if everything goes well, all will be forgiven. So, scanning started, Neil responded, taking the hint. We have an image. Okay, Herschel, anytime. I gave the order, and the roamers started the activation procedure in Hulk 1. It took almost 3 minutes for the alien equipment to go through whatever startup sequence it needed. We could review the whole thing later via the recorded Sudar video. And finally, pay dirt. Lights came on in the alien craft. Readings indicated rising power levels in engineering subsystems. We'd been careful to ensure that most of the vessel remained unpowered. We certainly didn't want to activate a security system somewhere. The roamers ran a few output tests and reported the results. I whistled. That's just a stupid level of power generation, assuming it's linear. Remember that scene in Forbidden Planet with the power meters? Neil grinned at me. This is just like that. We're barely tilting the first meter. I nodded, eyes unfocused. I think it might be time to pay Bill a visit. Well, there are no laws in the Bobiverse, of course. Bill's expression belied the casualness of his tone. Neil and I looked at each other nervously. But you guys are still morons. Bill raised his hands in an I-give-up gesture. If something had gone wrong and taken you out, we'd never have known about it.
We've been doing backups, Bill.
And how would we know to activate your backup, ESP?
Oh, yeah, there's that. I looked down at my shoes.
Bill relented a little, seeing my expression. Actually, Herschel, that's another project I'm working on. The Battle of Delta Pavonis made it clear that we need a more organized backup system. He waved us toward chairs and called in Jeeves. It looked like we wouldn't be flayed after all. Okay, fill me in.
I sat down and accepted a coffee. I took a moment for a sip to give me time to calm my nerves. Then I called up the diagrams and schematics as well as video records. You already know the basics. We found the Hulks, got the power system working in one of them. The power core is not fusion-based. I'd almost swear it uses some variation on the Casimir effect. There's a separate analysis on that. I pushed one set of schematics aside to bring up a larger scale diagram. Hulk 2 is scrap. We've been through it from one end to the other, and there's nothing interesting. It's basically a big old pile of salvage. We've had our devices breaking it down into transportable chunks for a couple of months now. But here's the thing. I paused for effect. Hulk 1 is a big, sort of hollow container with built-in power. The AI and drive systems are gone, of course, but so what? I grinned at Bill. Bill frowned, and I realized he hadn't gotten it yet. I looked at Neil, suddenly uncertain. Had we missed something obvious? Were we about to paint ourselves as total twits? Neil rolled his eyes, just the tiniest amount, then turned to Bill. Put a set of mover plates around it, Bill,
and it's the biggest damn colony ship ever made. It just needs stasis pods.
Bill's eyes slowly grew wide as the penny dropped.
Holy, I grinned, confidence returning.
And you could move the entire remaining Earth population in one trip.
28. Payback. Bob, April 22, 24, Eden. Caerleon was a busy area, almost frantic. Maybe it was the age of the residents and the relative lack of family groups. Caerleon had been colonized by juveniles just into puberty and going through the adolescent rebellion stage. Marvin and I agreed that we'd created a baby boomer generation when we moved everyone to Camelot and the birth rate subsequently surged. All those teenagers, getting hormonal at the same time, had probably just egged each other on. At any rate, it made sneaking up a difficult operation. I had the advantages of lack of scent and ability to stay completely still, of course. Plus some commando camouflage tricks that I looked up in the ship libraries. Still, it took almost 5 hours to maneuver into position. Original Bob would have been a single giant muscle cramp by that point, but the android muscles didn't get tired. And I was now in position. Surveillance had shown that Fred had a preferred location for his bodily functions, and he was very much a creature of habit. I picked a spot where I could take him on the way back and settled down to wait. As Fred turned back to the trail, I slammed into him, shoving him up against a tree. I placed the edge of my flint knife against his throat. "Hello, Fred. Remember our last conversation?" Fred's eyes were wide with fear, and he made no attempt to struggle. "I own you right now, Cootsie." I practically spit his favorite insult back in his face. "Whether you live to see the sun set today depends on my mood. Understand?" Fred understood. The odor of fear emanated from him, but he apparently wasn't going to just fold.
"My friends won't let this go," he said. "They'll come after you."
And he was right. This was something I'd worried about, but had hoped I wouldn't have to deal with. If he didn't capitulate in some manner, I might actually end up having to kill him. Could I do that in cold blood? If he just dug in his heels and called my bluff, I'd have to either follow through or lose any credibility. On the other hand, if I'd come with Donald, Fred would already be dead.
It was so tempting.
But even after being embedded in Delton's civilization for all these years, I still had a 21st century human squeamishness about taking life.
"What's your problem, Fred? Can't hunt on your own? Can't figure out which end of the spear to use? Or are you just lazy?"
Fred's ears went flat and his lips curled back from his teeth in a reaction that, for a Delton, was an expression of rage.
"It's so easy for you, isn't it? Sit there with all the resources and yap about how everyone else isn't living up to your standards. I'm not answerable to you."
"Well, right now you kind of are." I pushed the blade harder against his throat to make the point. But Fred was angry now. His reaction, his unexpected rage, surprised me. I'd mishandled this somehow, and now there was no way he was going to back down. Interesting food for thought, but right now it left me between a rock and a hard place. With a flash of inspiration, I directed a spy drone to make some suspicious noises in order to draw over some of the locals. Within moments, Fred and I could both hear his friends approaching and calling for him. He grinned at me in triumph. If his friends found a corpse, the whole village would be after me. That was fine. Let him think that. I put my face up close to his.
"Just remember that I can find you whenever I want. Next time, I won't discuss it, won't even let you know I'm there. Maybe you should start hanging around with your friends all the time."
With that, I gave him the usual quick jab in the breadbasket and grabbed his spear as he folded. I vanished into the forest just before his friends came into sight.
"Well, that hadn't gone quite according to plan." I made my way back to Camelot, still trying to convince myself that I could kill him if I had to. I told Archimedes the story over dinner. He took Fred's spear and examined it while I talked.
Donald would have just killed him, he said. Me, not so much. It's hard to kill people, unless they're attacking you.
Archimedes maneuvered the spear around until he was looking at the tip.
This is really terrible work. Someone just shattered a nodule and tied the sharpest shard onto the shaft.
He shook his head.
It's as likely to fall off as penetrate the target. If this is what they have, I'm not surprised they're having to steal food from our hunters.
I raised my eyebrows. Okay, the android actually pointed its ears forward and down, but it felt to me like the equivalent human expression. If the Caerleon citizens were having less hunting success because of equipment failure, could it be that easy? Perceived inequities like that had started more than one war on Earth. I liked to think Deltans were a little more sensible than humans in general, but not by that much. I sat back against the boulder behind me and stared into space, considering the options.
29. Looming Storm. Howard, May 2220, Vulcan. I stood outside the courtroom, taking deep breaths. I had an almost uncontrollable urge to drop a rock on the building. I'd expected nastiness. Ms. Benning had warned me that the children's strategy would be based on attacks. Knowing it and being subjected to it were two different things, though. To listen to their lawyer, I was some weird cross between Rasputin, Svengali, Machiavelli, and Lucifer. They hadn't quite accused me of drugging and brainwashing Bridget, but they'd sure been trying to imply it. Ms. Benning came to stand beside me.
There will be more of the same after recess. Just remember that he's trying to get a rise out of you. To get you to make a mistake.
I smiled slightly. I have some advantages in that area. Indeed, during cross-exam, I had enabled the endocrine control system. Funny that the cloning process, even with all the different generations of heaven vessels, still included that subsystem. With the control on, I was only mildly concerned about Mr. Kistler's accusations and innuendo. And a good thing, right now I would happily reach over and crush his throat with one hand. Dr. Onagi came over to stand with us. I looked at him. Is it appropriate for us to speak? He looked at Ms. Benning, who smiled in response.
Not a problem. The hospital is named in their suit as well, so we're on the same side. What's on your mind, Dr. Onagi?
I don't trust them.
This is news? I raised an eyebrow at him.
No, I mean, beyond the obvious adversarial situation. In particular, the eldest daughter just seems like a real piece of work. I wonder if they lose the case if she'll take it gracefully.
Ms. Benning's eyebrows rose.
You mean, as in sabotage of some kind?
Dr. Onagi nodded.
Oh, wow. I couldn't actually feel the blood drain from my face. No blood, after all, but the elevator dropping feeling was definitely there. We could win and still lose.
This bears some careful thought, Ms. Benning said. Being found in contempt of a court order could prejudice your case. So don't do anything precipitous. Just the same.
We settled into an uncomfortable silence as we each stared into space.
30. Armageddon. Bill, June 2223, 82 Eridani. I was going over some plans with Garfield when I received an emergency call from Captain Richards. I popped up the video window. What's up, Captain? Bill, we were doing so well with clearing the busters from orbit that I decided I could spare a dozen or so killers to reconnoiter the Lagrange points. To see what Medeiros is up to, you understand? I nodded, not liking the implication. Richards popped up a grainy, long-distance image. We picked this up. The frame rate and resolution were low, but I could make out that Medeiros was working around the metal ingots used as raw materials for the auto factories. What's he doing? I asked. We ran some image interpolations.
It looks like he's attaching Buster's to an ingot with cables.
Oh, hell.
A poor man's asteroid mover. The ingots weren't huge, but they were metal, and would survive re-entry almost unscathed. One of those could certainly create a new Barringer crater, more than enough to wipe out a colony anyway. This advances our schedule. How are you doing with the printers?
We've got a half dozen.
Richards grimaced.
One is working on a cradle for Mac, three are working on drones and roamers, and two are producing small busters, per your plans.
He shook his head.
What's with 20-kilogram busters, anyway?
I gave him a weak smile. Something Bob has been using as anti-personnel weapons, but our experience with the mosquito killers shows that more small attackers can be as effective as a few large attackers, and more flexible. Medeiros will probably be putting more armor on his busters by now, so the killers are going to be less effective. So, these will up the ante.
So, do we switch to nothing but busters?
Not just yet, Captain. We can do without Mac for now, but we need drones and roamers. For assembly, if nothing else. I'll run a min-max analysis to figure out what mix of construction will get us the best return. I'll let you know. We nodded and disconnected at the same time. I turned to Garfield, who had been listening to the whole exchange.
He's planning on just smashing things, isn't he?
Garfield looked gray with worry. It seems to be a theme with the Brazilian probes, Gar. I don't know if that's a cultural thing or military conditioning or something that Brazilian scientists installed as imperatives when they were building the replicants.
Or they're all insane.
I shrugged. Doesn't matter in the end. We have to react to the threat, and I don't see any reason to change the no-quarter policy on Medeiros. Garfield's only reply was a snort of agreement.
He started moving the ingot.
Richards glared at me out of the video window.
How did he manage that? I asked. He was nowhere near having enough busters just yesterday.
Richards shrugged.
He still doesn't really. I think he's starting before he's really ready. The acceleration is vanishingly small.
But he can add more in flight as he makes them. Richards nodded.
Unfortunately, it's too soon to tell which colony he's aiming for. He may not even have decided yet. It'll be another 24 hours before he has to commit.
We have printers on both colonies now, right? I started to run my hand through my hair, then caught myself. So there's no advantage to him one way or the other. My money's on Asgard, simply because he can get it there sooner.
We have to move on him now, Richards set his jaw. I'll contact General Kiroshi, see what he can put in the air.
Do that, Captain. Call me back.
It's not enough, Kiroshi said. We are two busters short of a one-on-one matchup, and that's without dealing with Medeiros himself. We can't win this.
And that's assuming we have eyes on all his devices. If he's carrying a couple in his hold, it will put us even farther behind.
I don't see it, I replied, looking at Richards. If he had more, they'd be pulling the ingot as well.
Do we have a choice?
I sighed. Not really, Captain. The longer we wait, the harder it will be to redirect the ingot, and by the time it actually gets here, we'll have built two more busters at the most. There were a few more comments, but we all knew we really had no choice. These busters would have to be pre-programmed, as we couldn't afford the time to add scutcoms. We sent them out from both colonies, timed to arrive simultaneously. I was about to disconnect when I had a thought. Gentlemen, how many mosquito killers do we have left? And where are they?
Kiroshi answered, a little over 200. They're all in orbit around Takama. We haven't had any close-in encounters at either colony for a few days.
Why? Let's throw them into the mix. I'll do some calculations and give you the times and vectors. Our busters arrived at the expected time and place. Because they were operating without scuts, we were getting the video play-by-play several minutes after the fact. Whatever was going to happen had already happened. There could be no finesse on this operation. Each one of our busters would take out one of Medeiros's busters. We would aim several busters at Medeiros himself, but he would use his busters to intercept. Barring a miracle in him missing one, we'd be left with Medeiros and two busters to deal with. We watched as 14 video images closed in on 14 targets, then 14 video images disappeared.
Well, that was textbook, Richard said. I smiled tightly. And right about now, Medeiros should be feeling pretty smug. Two new video windows popped up as the incoming mosquito killers zeroed in on Medeiros. We knew we would leave two of Medeiros' busters, but we made sure those busters were tethered to the ingot and unavailable for defense. Medeiros detected the incoming killers and turned tail, but he was far too late. Unlike the busters, which had decelerated to arrive at the battleground at a controllable velocity, the killers had continued to accelerate all the way from Takama. They arrived with a considerable momentum. Fewer than half struck the Brazilian ship, but 100 small impacts were still sufficient to open up the side of his vessel. Medeiros lost his line and began to drift.
"He's down," Richard said. "Not sure if he's dead, but propulsion is offline."
"Do we have any more busters? Any more killers?"
Kiroshi looked from one to the other of us. I shook my head. "Busters are all expended. There are lots of killers, but they're traveling away from Medeiros at high speed. They'll take as long to decelerate as they took to accelerate to that velocity. Then they have to accelerate back."
"He might still be out by the time they get back. We don't know how many roamers he has left after the space battle over Mac."
That was true. It was certainly worth a shot anyway. "Okay, General, I'm sending orders to the killers now. Light speed delay will add to the total turnaround time. I think we're looking at 22 hours before they get back." Richards frowned.
"Hell, we could get a couple of drones there in less time than that."
"To do what? Even at full acceleration, they're unlikely to do much damage."
I was thinking more along the lines of grabbing Medeiros himself.
I stared at Richards. That hadn't occurred to me. Stick some roamers in the drone's holds, and they could enter the Brazilian ship and extract the replicant matrix. I felt a twinge of nausea at what we were not quite planning. Memories of Homer, of the five cubes back on Earth during Bob One's training, swirled with images from my imagination of Mac under Medeiros' thumb. But we were dealing with someone who was about to drop a metal meteor on a colony. Squeamishness was inappropriate. The drones approached the Brazilian ship, which was still drifting. We decided this was important enough to sacrifice all of Asgard's roamers, save two for rebuilding. This would be almost like a beach assault. Anything short of 100% casualties would be acceptable. The two drones came in as quickly as their drives could manage, braking with no leeway to arrive at rest just outside the rent in the enemy vessel. Cargo doors popped open and eight roamers, including two of the big industrial size units, stormed across the gap. The squad headed straight for the location of the replicant matrix. We knew the layout from Bob One's first encounter with Medeiros, way back in Epsilon Eridani. The roamers encountered immediate resistance from the onboard roamers. The battle was short and furious. Medeiros was fighting for his life now. The standard roamers worked to protect the big units as those would be needed for moving the matrix. Plasma cutters flashed and roamer parts floated around the enclosed space. The battle tilted in our direction once we realized that we could still use the big units. Anytime an enemy roamer got too close, an industrial unit lashed out with a leg. If the impact didn't disarticulate the victim outright, being bounced off a wall took it out of the fight for a few moments. Soon, we were down to one or two defenders, depending on how you counted body parts. Then the last roamer was dispatched, and "What the hell?" I exclaimed as all video feeds disappeared. Garfield poked at consoles. "The cargo drones are gone too. They've..." "Wait a moment, that's not true. I'm still getting telemetry from number two. I'll try to activate a camera." Richards jerked in surprise in his video window as the event registered at the human timescale.
"What happened?"
"Looks like Medeiros fell on his sword rather than be captured," Garfield said. He popped up a video window. "This is what the second drone is showing. It's damaged, by the way. Won't be flying back on its own." The window showed the Brazilian vessel, or what was left of it. Pieces of spaceship spun and caught the sunlight as they receded. The ship was cut in two, and the two halves had been opened like flowers. "He knew," I said. "He knew he was finished. I don't know if he thought he was taking the victory away from us or thought we'd capture him and extract secrets." I shook my head. "I will never understand Medeiros.
I really hope this is the last time I have to deal with him.
That's a little worrying, though, Garfield commented. I remember him being a bit on the pompous side at the first meeting with Bob One. This time around, he never said a word, not even an exit monologue. I wonder what secrets he might feel the need to take to the grave.
An excellent question, and the expression on Richards's and Kuroshi's faces showed the same concern that I felt.
Never even saw him coming, Max said. He sat in my VR holding a coffee, feet up on a footstool. I remember talking to you about draining the swamps on Tacoma, and the next thing I know, I'm back in my default VR.
Yep, he hit you square on. I raised my coffee.
You can go over the videos at your leisure, but you missed some interesting times.
Which aren't over, I'm afraid. Mac looked at his coffee, a frown forming. We have to assume Medeiros is still out there, in one form or another. We'll have to set up defenses, especially here and in Alpha Centauri.
That's right, buddy. The colonies are okay with you diverting all printers to defensive items until you have a minimum level of ordnance.
Yep. Busters. Then a new vessel. Then some clones, then more printers. It'll be a while before I'm able to support the colonies directly.
They'll do what they can with groundside printers, Mac. Might be a good idea for them to have at least a small auto factory on each planet, just on principle.
Mac nodded, staring into space.
Just when we think we've got things figured out, the universe throws another curve.
I grinned at him. Well, that's life.
31. Cleanup. Marcus. September 2215. Poseidon. The loss of their main fleet was a blow to the Council, but not a fatal one, as it turned out. Maybe I'd been underestimating the Council. Or maybe they had someone who was a terrific strategist. Whatever the reason, the Council kept coming up with surprises. The first surprise, although I suspected as much, was that they didn't have just the dozen cargo ships. Our first inkling of that came the day after our takeover of strategic ground assets.
We've got several cities under attack, Gina announced, sitting up abruptly.
Cal opened one eye. He was lying on a blanket getting some sun, and said,
With what?
See for yourselves.
Gina held her tablet up. On it was shown a grainy, obviously blown-up image of a vessel. It appeared to my eye to be a variation on a version 3 Heaven vessel.
Interesting. Looks like they've been reading Bobnet, I said. I don't know why that didn't occur to me. I wouldn't normally think of it as strategic information. And yet the improvements the Bobs have been making in the Heaven design have been primarily for military purposes,
Cal responded.
Plus, Dinu added, if they've been perusing Bobnet, wouldn't they have found out about the cloaking?
I raised an eyebrow at Dinu, then exited the android and framejacked. A quick scan of recent Bobnet blogs reassured me on that front. Returning to normal time, and to the android, I responded, There's nothing but general descriptions, Dinu. With all the crap happening, Bill's just been transmitting plans directly to other Bobs. A bit of serendipity there. I didn't add that I'd just sent off a description of this situation to Bill. Hopefully, he would scan the blogs for any other potentially damaging information and remove it.
Great. We'd just reinvented military secrecy.
Gina, who had continued monitoring the situation, announced,
Anthor, Kaol, and Petarth are fending off missiles. It looks like whoever is still fighting has decided to go for a scorched earth policy. They're not even trying to board. Just trying to knock the cities out of the sky.
She looked over at me. I nodded. Reluctant as I was to get directly involved, in this case, hundreds of lives were at stake. I ordered several squads of busters down from their hiding place on Pelias, the inner moon.
It'll take a few minutes for them to get there, I said to Gina. Can you tell the cities that help is coming?
Gina nodded and typed furiously for a few moments.
Done. This is unbelievable.
Dinu shook his head.
They're just trying to kill people. It's war, Dinu,
Gina replied.
It's not what we wanted, but apparently it's what the Council finds preferable to losing. Although I don't think they expected it to go this far either. Most of their recent moves look more like ad libs than strategies.
She looked at me.
Three Council members still outstanding. This could be orders from any or all of them.
My money's on Brennan, though. Cal glanced at each of us. Some of the others at least seemed to be misguided but well-intentioned. He was all about the power.
Maybe. Let's get this done, then we can worry about assigning blame. I looked up as my heads-up display showed the busters coming up on the fields of battle. I ordered them to take out the attackers, if possible, by taking out critical systems, but otherwise, by whatever worked. In seconds, the reports came back. 4 ships downed by clean reactor strikes, 3 more totally destroyed. The 2 remaining ships turned tail and fled. I took a moment to mourn the people I'd just killed. Very probably they were just following orders. But those orders had meant knocking a city containing several hundred civilians out of the sky. There was a point where following orders didn't cut it. I put a couple of cloaked drones on the tail of the escaping ships and recalled my surviving busters. If there had been any doubt in the Council's teeny minds that the cursed replicant was still extant, this engagement had removed it. The Council forces would be moving much more cautiously in the future. Tell the city defenders not to shoot down the surviving ships, I said to Gina. They might lead us back to the leadership. Gina nodded, and we settled back onto the grass. It was an odd juxtaposition. Revolutionary leaders in the middle of a shooting war, directing operations while lounging on a manicured lawn. I tracked the fleeing ships to a relatively small mat in the northern current, earmarked as an automated farming platform. Video images from the drones showed it to be anything but. A small but well-stocked airbase was probably the home of the Council fleet.
Well, that's not good. Cal shook his head. We'll have to check absolutely every mat on inventory now.
I grinned at him. Seems the Council has been planning this for a long time.
Or at least, planning for something, he replied. I can't see how they could have predicted your flying cities.
I nodded at that. This doesn't really look military, though. Security forces, maybe. Let's send in the roamers and a mop-up squad. Cal nodded. He and Gina started typing furiously while I worked on loading up the roamer squad into cargo drones. It took longer than expected to prepare for our assault. I was surprised to discover that with all the buzzing around and knocking out enemy ships and missiles, I was down to the dregs with busters and roamers. And without the system printers under my command, I couldn't immediately print more. In the end, Gina rounded up a squad of security people and we stormed the defenders the old-fashioned way. Sort of. I was still far happier with sacrificing an AMI than a human. Gina led the charge herself. The busters couldn't smash the buildings at speed. I didn't want to kill anyone. But they could smack gun emplacements hard enough to force defenders back.
Concentrate on all defenders on the west walls,
Gina's voice ordered over the comm system. Our security people set up a blistering fire which kept the defenders down.
Marcus, there's a weak spot on the wall at the southwest side. Can you get an explosive into there?
No explosives, Gina. Still too dangerous to print, but... A weak spot was easy to target. A shipbuster came in at about 100 clicks and rammed the corner of the wall. 500 kilograms of steel completely did a number on it. Maybe a little too well. As usual, I seemed to be a little more enthusiastic with the ramming than was really required.
Thanks, Captain Crash. All units enter with caution.
I sent in some roamers as well, although all I had left were the little guys. The video feed showed a stunned, dust-covered group with no fight left in them. I think they're done, Gina. It's all mop-up. Gina, normally a somewhat dour, brooding person, was grinning unabashedly.
We got Brennan. No question that he ordered the attacks. We'll be debriefing the security people we captured, but I'll bet none of the other council members were involved in this.
Still, they'll all have to be dealt with. There will be trials. There will likely be convictions. Then there will be the question of what to do with them.
Cal shrugged.
My money's on menial labor.
Gina blew out a noisy breath.
Yeah, let's not count our chickens just yet.